This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Shall we tell them who Matt is during the podcast, or shall we just every so often hear some random bloke in the corner?
Just like that, probably.
Let's find out. Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I am joined in the podcast studio, which is also the Hazlitt Theatre in Maidstone, by the one and only Mr. Danny Ward.
You were a bit peaky then at the beginning then, champ.
Shall I do it again?
No, it's fine.
So, yes, so we are at the Hazlitt Theatre in Maidstone. We've got a tour show. Dan, do I keep peeking?
No, I'm just... It's
oh, right. I'm on edge, Danny. I'm on edge with seeing you.
I mean, ideally, you'd have a pair of headphones as well.
How long has this been ongoing? At some point,
I'm sure. And I'm just refusing to buy them. Well, at some point, there's going to be a pair of headphones for the guest as well.
I just haven't got round to it.
All elusive third pair of cans.
We have got two pairs of cans.
Yeah, we haven't got a third one when we have a guest.
No.
Remember that? We used to do it back in the...
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah,
it feels like a million years ago, didn't it?
Yeah, but we're going to start doing them properly again soon.
Yeah, we're back at it now after the...
Edinburgh and
all sorts, but we're up and running again now.
Yep, and we've got a lovely tour show. Danny's first one back on the tour.
I haven't gigged since the 26th of August, so...
I can't wait to see what happens out there.
Fingers crossed, everyone.
25 minutes of...
I reckon that's the longest I haven't gigged. Well, actually, I was going to sit with the pandemic, wasn't it? But
yeah,
it's the longest I haven't gigged in a few years. That's for sure, in a couple of years.
Okay, that's interesting. Do you think that matters?
Ask me at 8:05.
But like, do you think?
Yeah.
But you know the stuff. So you know how to say the stuff. Mm. What do you think it is? Is it the rhythm, the timing, the confidence of just being on stage? Like, will you be a bit more uncomfortable up there if you haven't done it for a while?
I think sometimes it's good to have a break from anything, including comedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, to have some time off, come back to it fresh.
Well, you know what? I went away. It was only 5-6 days. I went to Barcelona.
Yeah.
For a break. Didn't even do comedy over there. I treated it like a little writing retreat, like get the next show started. Just a nice hotel, just chilled out. And you know what? When I came back and did those first few shows, I really enjoyed them. I think if you do something all the time, you don't appreciate it as much.
No.
So I'm flying at the moment. I'm really enjoying everything.
That's good stuff. Matt, have you been working out? He's looking out of a buff, isn't he?
He is. He's got a personal trainer. Oh, he just tensed then.
I've just realised.
Don't worry,
different.
Listeners. You can't hear Matt, but what we'll do is we'll post a photo of him with his shirt off for you when we release the podcast.
So it's Matt Price, but it's not that Matt Price.
It's a different Matt Price. Yeah,
there is a comedian Matt
Price.
We should have Matt Price on.
The trouble is, does he live in the West Country?
No, I think he lives in South London, but I could be wrong.
Oh, well, there's no excuse.
I might have that entirely wrong. Yeah. He's from the West Country.
Yeah.
As am I, but, you know.
Yeah, we haven't had a good old storyteller on here for a while, I don't think.
This is Matt
Price. A yarn
Price.
Teller.
Matt's in the comedy game, though.
Matt's in the comedy game. Matt is a comedy promoter for Lone Star in Kent.
And also was in Wheelbarrow Town.
Our esteemed YouTube
exclusive to YouTube web series.
Go check it out.
You know, because I was thinking about this, because it just so happened that when I, you know, my the camping video that went viral, you know that?
Yep.
1.5 million.
How long did that take you to get that in?
1.5 million and counting. And I had the Wheelbarrow Town t-shirt in there, didn't I? So that was inadvertently 1.5 million people would have gone, Wheelbarrow Town.
Oh, they might Google. We should have a little look at our numbers.
So we could have a look at the numbers of YouTube and see if they've gone into triple figures yet.
Yep.
It's an underground, it's a cult following.
I've been thinking about this, and I think we should do an edit, cut it right down and relaunch, because there's so many more people that haven't seen it.
Yeah. But yeah, we probably should.
Yeah. So Matt was
all over Wheelbarrow.
Matt was
town,
that. Matt,
he?
Did you know Matt has done an open 5 minutes, open spot 5 minute set?
Oh, I didn't know this.
So Matt is a school friend of mine from since we were, I don't know, 4, 5. And so basically, it's quite funny that Matt's going to be really nervous talking on this, I think.
Nah.
Is that right?
I want to hear some of Matt's first show.
Well, I that's what I thought. It might be fun to talk about this. So when we started, myself and Stuart Foreman, who was also known as Kurt Driver, we started around the same time, and we gigged together all the time. And Stuart has done an episode of this, and he's just started comedy again in Australia. And I think, yeah, so he was on an episode when I was over there as well, I think. So Matt used to just come and support us, used to come and hang out and go to gigs. So we're doing it for a while. And then, Matt, do you remember where your one gig was?
Was it Hastings?
It was Hastings. I think it might have been St. Leonard's Comedy Club.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
And it was like a piss take, wasn't it? We basically dared Matt to go up there and do... Well, Matt, we once said to Matt, just come up with a joke on the spot. And then Matt just said some stuff. And Matt was a farmer at the time. So he just started telling this story about, and it didn't make any sense. And there wasn't a punchline. He got up and he just told this joke that he knew wasn't going to work. Matt, can you tell us it now?
Oh, blimey. Trying to think what it was now. So
I know what it was.
I was on my tractor and was just driving up and down in the field, up and down, as you do on a tractor. And suddenly there's this really big bang. So, oh, no, what was that? So I looked out the back window and the machine looked all right. And I couldn't work out what was going on. But as I started driving off again, the tractor was pulling to the left, just pulling to... And I was like, oh, no, I can't make it go in a straight line. So I called my dad and said, Dad, look, the tractor won't go in a straight line, it's just pulling to the left. And he goes, have you tried turning to the right? He's like, yeah, it doesn't work, it just wants to go to the left. Anyway, long story short, you never guess what it ended up being. It was only the left back final drive.
That's the best bit of anti-comedy I think I've ever heard. But what was really funny, because it sounds like a proper old joke, so you're expecting it to actually be funny. And I remember really clearly the audience. So we're talking 2008.
So the
audience were really sort of listening to that, all that build up. And when he said left back final drive, there was this sort of laughter. And then they went,
oh, yeah,
what?
Yeah.
They went, ha ha. And it just stopped all of a sudden. And then Matt just got off.
Matt, what's the problem with the left back what drive?
Left back final drive. It's something in the back of the tractor that snapped on the drive shaft.
It's just a true story.
Yeah, it's a true story.
it's just a true story.
Yeah, the left back final drive snapped. And
have you noticed that Matt's holding the microphone like he's going to lick an ice cream?
He is. I was thinking that. It looks so awkward. There we go.
I'm just sitting here rambling, really.
Yeah, all right. Well, pass it back. And if we have anything else.
I'm still can't look. I'm still just looking at his biceps.
Yeah, he's always. Oh, crikey. Crikey, mate.
So.
You got an OnlyFans, Matt?
Because what you could do is you could have you on tractors, because Matt's got is it sexual, your attraction to tractors or not? Like,
Matt loves tractors.
I know
so
he loves
much.
Tractors. I remember when we were doing Wheelbarrow Town, yeah. And a tractor went past and he ran to the window like a dog looking at as it drove past, thinking their owner was home. I'll never forget that.
As a John Deere.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just seeing if there's any if there's a quiz on the history of tractors. And there is. I'll just ask you three questions, right? Okay. Why are giant-sized tractors useful? Why are giant-sized tractors useful? A, the cabs are comfortable. B, they pull wide ploughs. C, they work well on snow. Or D, they are manoeuvrable. Not manoeuvrable, no.
So the bloody big bastards. I'll translate. Hang on, use my mic.
This is like, look at this. Third, like the elusive third microphone one day as well. One day. Go on.
I should imagine it's so it can pull a wide plough.
So it can pull a wide plough? Giant tractors pull extra wide ploughs so they can work big fields quickly.
Surprising that.
There you go. Right, here we go. Why did tractors replace horses on farms? A, tractors didn't need names. B, tractors were stronger. C, tractors were brightly coloured. Or tractors were cheaper.
Well, tractors wouldn't be cheaper. It'd be B again, I think. What was B again?
They were stronger.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Tractors were much stronger than horses.
He's
smashing this. Third one. Final question. What was the main problem with steam tractors? A, they move slowly. B, they were very noisy. C, they often broke down. Or D, not powerful.
Oh, well, they're going to be powerful because it's like coal steam. So it's going to probably be A, I would think.
A, moved slowly.
Yeah.
God, 3 out of 3. Steam tractors move slowly because they were very heavy. There you go. How about that?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well done, Matt.
There we go. So we've got a very special episode today.
Yeah.
Because this is an episode I recorded so long ago. And it's embarrassing how long ago we recorded it. But
Not we, Mark. Oh, I say. My hands are clean on this one.
Yeah, no. Myself and our lovely guest. But it was like a couple of days before I went to Australia.
Yeah.
And then it just got lost in the shuffle. And it was so good. It was such a nice chat. And I was invited as a guest on his podcast, which is called My Time Capsule, which do go and check it out. It's really fun. It's Michael Fenton Stevens. And you will have seen Michael in so many TV shows. Let me just
Google it.
No, there's loads. I mean, I could tell you a couple, but I might as well list just the collection of them.
IMBD, you want here, Chief?
Okay, first one comes up, Nighty Night. Brilliant show. He's been on Ghosts. He's been on that Rogue Agent. That was a really good TV show. He's been on Not Going Out. He's been on Benidorm. He's been on Only Fools and Horses. He's been on The Crown.
He's been in The Crown. He's been on Only Fools and Horses.
Have I absolutely cocked that
I've
up?
Just never heard that as a.
You go on horses. He's been in Outnumbered. He's just been in Two Pints of Lager, and Packet of Crisps, Lead Balloon. He's just been in everything.
Yeah,
he's brilliant. He's done theatre. We chat about some pantomime jokes that he's written.
No, you didn't.
Didn't we? Oh, I'm annoyed about that, but I'll put it behind me. So here he is. It's Michael Fenton Stevens. What a nice man. Really loved the interview. Sorry it took so long, but we've got it now. Enjoy it.
I've had lots of great feedback about the episode. It was quite funny. I was on my way back from I was doing a long drive last night, and I thought to myself, I wonder whose mic's had on this week. I'll have a look, and it was me. I was like, oh, such an idiot. not listening to that.
Listen to that. I've heard every one of his jokes.
I know what happens.
It's always the same bloody jokes he does over and over again.
Speaking of jokes, we might as well get cracking straight into the episode.
Let's do it.
So last time I spoke to you on email, you were saying you were going to be doing some voiceover for a memoirs, and I thought I could do a joke that didn't start the episode with a joke that didn't work linked to that.
Yes.
It's not really a proper joke. I think that's why it doesn't. It gets a little laugh, but not enough really. So I don't really know how to get into it, but something along the lines of, when Banksy does his memoirs, he could call it his autobiography. It's a nice little play, isn't it?
But it does work. You know, I mean, it's always difficult, isn't it? Do you know when you write a joke, you go, oh, I wish I could make that more succinct. I wish I could tidy that up a bit.
Tell
and
me.
It is. I've written it down because I've thought of it last night and in bed, strange enough.
Brilliant.
I wanted to buy a children's storybook about a grey cat, but I couldn't remember if it was called Mog or Mig. So I texted Waterstones and they just sent me back a drawing of a cat. And I thought, ah, emoji.
That's so forced, but I love it.
Is that the first time you've heard the play on words?
Never heard
emoji?
That.
No,
not, me yeah, either. I think because I would think if anyone, I think jumping to the cat and the mog,
yeah.
I think that's quite specific. I think if anyone thought to themselves M-O-G and thought mog, they wouldn't necessarily jump straight to the cat. So maybe no. I wouldn't. That might, I don't think there's another famous mog, is there?
That's what I was trying to think of. I looked it up. I googled it, and in fact, it's some sort of something to do with the immune system. It's got an incredibly long name.
Oh,
yeah.
But the fact that you can have an emoji of a cat.
Yeah.
I feel like there must be another. Is there another angle? I think you might have the best angle there. To be
maybe.
Honest,
I don't know. It's just a little bit too tortuous. You really want a joke to flow, don't you? You want it just to be there and go, I think.
Maybe if you... What if you started with the... I got sent an picture of a cat.
I got sent of a picture... No. I sent a picture of a grey cat. Yeah. I got sent of a picture of a grey cat. And I thought, well, I don't know if anybody knows what that is. You could just make it that succinct, couldn't you? I got sent a picture of a grey cat, and I thought, ah, emoji.
Yeah. Do you think they'd have to know the
mog?
It's mog. So that's a character, isn't it? Of a cat.
Yeah. It's a little series of children's books called Mog, and it's about this little grey cat.
Our cats.
You'd sort of need to be a parent.
Moggies when... anyway.
Is that a moggy? Like a... Yeah.
But not mog.
Not just mog. Sadly.
That's
moggy.
A shame, isn't it?
Moggy.
Yeah, I like it. But hey, listeners are always chipping in. So if listeners...
Emoji. Emoji. No, doesn't work.
M-O-G is perfect.
M-O-G.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It works. Oh, what a shame.
Well, no, I think it does work. I'm going to say that's a win. I think that's good. We both like it.
Brilliant. I mean, I like the concept of it, you know.
Yeah.
I've written jokes over the years like that I think that make me laugh. And then I say them to other people and they say, but no, that doesn't really work. How can that doesn't make sense?
Do they say it or do you say it once you've said it?
Well, I say it once I've said it, really. I sort of say, that's a good joke, isn't it? Oh, hang on a second, the logic is not quite right. So years ago, I wrote a joke which was, and this again is jokes, you know, jokes go out of, they become too old.
Mm.
Because in fact, what they're referring to is something that is general knowledge when you write them, but that general knowledge disappears.
So again, the same with Mog, really, because they're quite old now, aren't they, I think?
Yeah, quite. And it's also people who've got children would know it, but other people wouldn't. So you'd get a scattering of people.
More niche.
You know, but there was The Guardian, when I was a young man, was famous for having lots of misspellings in it.
Oh.
Because it was, they rushed it. And so it was known as a groaniag. I think Private Eye always referred to it as a groaniad.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because it was they were so bad at laying out their typesetting. And I had a joke that I used to do which never really got a laugh, which was I used to be a typesetter for The Guardian, but I found that the wok was getting on tip of me.
Yes, great. That took me a second as well. I was like, what? Words? Yeah.
I quite like a sort of a slow burner.
Me
I
too,
like one
yeah.
where, you know, I mean, we've spoken about this before, where the audience look at you for a bit thinking, what did he say?
Yeah.
And then they work out what you've said.
Satisfying.
It is, yeah.
But for everyone, to be honest.
But also a terrifying moment, isn't it, when there is that silence, because you think, maybe they're not going to go with me on this.
I had one last night, and they literally took 3 seconds. I know that doesn't sound a lot.
Oh, that's a long time.
But I thought, oh, they were really with me for the whole thing, and they just didn't go for it for ages. I thought, oh, no, I've got to explain this whole thing. But they did. And then I made a joke out of the fact that it took them a while.
Yeah.
But did you ever do stand-up?
Not really, no. I did it as part of a team. So when the comedy store, when the comic strip opened as a rival club to the comedy store in the early 80s, and a number of people who I think didn't get on with Keith Allen decided to go somewhere else.
What's Keith Allen to do with the comedy store then?
He was the comedy store. He was a sort of a host of the comedy store.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he was, and his rival at the time was Alexis Sale, who used to come in and do stuff occasionally, but I don't think they particularly got on. Oh. And I may be wrong, you know, but that's the way I remember it. And actually, then the comic strip opened up. Peter Richardson opened the comic strip and invited a lot of people along to perform at it. And we performed there. We sang there and did some sort of sketches, really. So it was okay to do sketches then. You didn't just have stand-up. Stand-up wasn't really formed as in this country. I mean, America, it was quite strong, you know, but we didn't really have the tradition of it. We had, you know, the classic sort of the comedians type thing.
Yes.
Where people just told a series of the old school things. But we didn't have stand-up comedians, and they were unusual. Arnold Brown was one of the first, I think, who just stood there and just did a series of funny jokes.
Mm.
But they were all PC, which was completely unusual.
And original, were they, as well?
Yeah, yeah, all his own. Mm. So they hadn't been written by anybody else. And then you had other people like Rick Mayall and Aid Edmondson, and they would do sketches. So they would do bottom-type sketches, bottom-esque sketches. They were the Dangerous Brothers. You know, they came charging on, just shouting, "We are the Dangerous Brothers!" And they would just do supposedly dangerous things. And in fact, that's sort of where bottom came from, those characters. And then Rick used to do, I remember him trying it out and saying beforehand, "Do you think this will work?" And he did this sort of, this poet, which I think was sort of a Kevin Turvey type early character as well. But he had a sort of a soft R. "Whenever I'm near to the theatre," was one line I remember, which I always thought was a fantastic rhyme.
Yeah.
So that happened, you know.
Do you remember many of your sketches from back then?
We had, it was a combination of really, I mean, the problem is we'd come out of university. So, in fact, we had that rather sort of, Stephen Fry, Hugh Laurie type thing, where it was a lot of wordplay and a lot of clever words and people twisting stuff all the time, you know. So we used to do a love story sketch where basically the joke was, which we repeated again and again, "Will you marry me?" So we would say to the vicar standing there, "Will you marry us?" And she's like, I can't marry you. I'm a vicar." No. "Will you marry? Dad, we've got to get married. Dad, we're going to get married. I can't marry you, son. I'm married to your mother." We did that joke as many possible ways as you could. It was terrible. But
is that one of those things where the more you went, even though it was more forced, the funnier it got because you were forcing it?
I think so. The laugh was before you said the line rather than after, because every time somebody said the phrase, "We've got to get married," or shall we get married, you knew that the person was going to say, "But I can't marry you."
That's brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. So when I did your podcast, we were talking about one specific joke you wrote for pantomime that didn't work. And I was like, leave it. This is for my podcast. This is perfect.
Yeah.
So you've done a lot of have you always done panto?
No, not really. No, I started sort of, I suppose, late 30s. I started doing, and so I went straight in doing Dame, which is weird, really, because normally you'd start playing, you know,
make a silly joke then about just before the war, but late 30s. Anyway, sorry, carry on. I can't help it. That's the way my brain goes. And I'm I have to say it.
I did it in the late 30s, yeah. And then sadly, Hitler spoiled the whole thing, you know. He started a war and we didn't do any more pantos until at least 47. Yeah.
Sorry, so you were saying, I tend to...
Oh, that's it.
The troll, you are a much better interviewer than me, because what you do, you let people talk, because I remember thinking this when I was doing your podcast, and then I kept talking for ages, and then when I stopped, you just... lovely little question back to something I said quite a while ago, but my memory isn't good enough, so when I think of something I need to say, I have to say it then, or it'll just go, and I'll just be frustrated for the whole time.
Well, but that means this is real conversation, doesn't it?
Right.
You know, and my problem is that I have a bank of jokes in my head. And the people I worked with all those years ago, they're always saying to me, how the hell do you remember that? But I think once you've heard a joke, it sticks with me. It sticks in my head. I mean, Mark Arden and Steve Frost. Steve Frost is famous now for doing improv, and he's one of the Comedy Store players and that sort of thing, who's a brilliant man. But him and Mark Arden, now they did a famous series of Levi commercials, I think, and made an enormous amount of money. But before that, they used to do this act, and they had a joke in it, which was that Steve used to say, yeah, I made a citizen's arrest the other day. And Mark said, well, what's a citizen's arrest? And he said, well, it's like a police arrest, except you don't get that searing pain in your bollocks. Now, I don't know, why would that joke stick in your head?
Just that's just stuck with you all those years.
All those years. So that's from, I saw them perform that at the comic strip in the early 80s. Yeah. There must be something in your brain, isn't it, that keeps you just slowly having revolving jokes around in your head.
Do you find that when you go to sleep and you're resting, that's when you start thinking about this stuff more? Because that's what I do. Like last night, I could not sleep because I had a couple of joke ideas in my head, and then I kept thinking of something. I was like, if I don't write it down now, I'll forget it. So I had to keep waking up and put it in my phone.
Ah, yeah. No, it's true, because it will disappear as well. You think, I thought of a really good one. What was it?
Yeah.
So you have to say them, I think. I think you have to say them out loud and see if... I think it's if you say them to two or three people, then they stick, you know. I mean, I saw a thing on YouTube the other day, which made me laugh a lot. It was just a man saying to his wife... It made me laugh because he laughed inordinately at his own joke. And that was what was funny about it. A joke is okay. It's... what's the difference between Dubai and Abu Dhabi? People in Dubai don't like the Flintstones, but people in Abu Dhabi do.
Yeah, I've heard that one before. That's really
good. Yeah. So it's a good joke, but I remember it because I then immediately told it to my son, my wife, and a man in the shop. You know,
brilliant.
And in it goes. And it's like, you know, years and years ago, we used to do it. I got last night, couldn't go to sleep because I got stuck on this idea. I was thinking about doing this, and I was thinking about jokes that we've had in our lives that in a way have worked and then not worked, because we used to do a joke right at the end of our show, which was in our next program, we'll be looking at the legal profession and asking, is legal aid just a fizzy drink for lawyers?
I like that.
It's a good joke. It's fine, you know, as a passing joke, it works. And it was delivered by Helen, who was in our review group, and she did that for years and always got a laugh on it. And then one evening at dinner, she suddenly went, oh, legal aid, like lemonade. We all stared at her and said, what? She said, legal aid, like lemonade. And we went, yes, that's right. And she said, oh, no, I've just got it. And she, honestly, about 2 years of telling the joke for 2 years, just with exactly the right...
She got a reaction, so she's like, well, that works.
Yes, it's fine. As long as I say it that way, it gets a laugh. I don't know why.
That's brilliant. So I interrupted you. Well, oh, sorry.
That's right. No,
and I did it again.
You did it again.
I interrupted you trying to correct my interruption. I'm terrible at this.
The moment that she actually worked out what the joke was, she couldn't deliver it.
Right.
Yeah. Once she knew what it was,
sell it.
She over delivered it. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's interesting. So as a comedian, you're better off not understanding your jokes.
Well, in her case, I think I'm not sure that's necessarily true.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So, no. Pantomime.
Yes,
let me
okay.
Get back to pantomime.
Go on then. I've got pantomime over the years. I've written, you know, as you're writing scripts for pantomime, and I like writing scripts for pantomime, and I haven't had that many opportunities, I think, because people think that I go a bit bizarre. I've had routines in pantomimes. One of my favourite ideas, which did get into a pantomime, was that right at the beginning, instead of starting the way that pantos always start, with the lights going down, an opening song, and then a fairy comes on with a flash, and they all start like that. Mm. And then the baddie comes on, and then you go into the story. And that's the routine of a pantomime. Well, we started like that, and the music sort of started, and then I went and I came out from behind the curtain in curlers and said, no, we're not ready. We're not ready. We can't start yet. One of the cast is not here. So I pretended one of the cast was stuck in traffic and she played the part of the Sultan's wife. But then I said, actually, she's not on till the second half. I think it'll be okay. We'll start and she should be here. She'll be fine. So then every time I came on, I would look into the wings and go, is she? No, she, where is she? Oh, okay, right. No, she'll be here. Don't worry. And I just kept that idea going until right towards the end of the play, we were in the Sultan's palace and the Sultan said, I want my wife to dance. Bring on the Sultana. And he clapped his hands. And then we all stood there. And I went, Is she not made it? She's not. Oh, well, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. She hasn't made it. So thanks very much for coming. I hope you all enjoyed it. And then we brought the curtain in.
No way.
We actually brought the curtain down. And then we took it back up out again. I said, hang on a minute. I've had an idea. And I would then pick somebody from the audience to play that part. So we did a sort of a generation game thing where we would show them, you know, what's that in the road ahead? No, what's that in the road ahead? You know, we would do that sort of silly joke.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's brilliant. Oh, that's commitment to a joke. I feel sorry for the woman that was first cast as the Dalton's wife.
She never got
love you.
It was one of the dancers, yeah. She would say, you're axed, you're gone. But brilliant. I like that idea of turning it upside down, you know, actually mixing it up.
And I think that makes it fresh for people that go to pantomimes a lot because it's something that they're not expecting.
Yeah, I think so. I wrote a routine when I was doing pantomime in Cambridge, and now it's become almost de rigueur to be done in whenever you do the Dick Whittington. There's a scene where they travel from London to the Far East to try and do a deal to save the shop. And normally they say we get on the ship, or you might have a scene at the dockside, and then the next thing is at the Sultan's palace. When I wrote a thing where they brought on this truck, which was a rocking deck, so. It was on a pivot.
Aye.
And stagehands stood on either end of it, which were in the wings, and went up and down with it. So the whole thing went up and down on either side, quite a lot, actually. Mm. And then we had everything on rollers, so all the plates were on rollers, and it was the canteen, so the ship's canteen. And I pretended to be the cook. And somebody came in and said, oh, what have you got for dinner? And I said, oh, we've got starters, we've got fantastic, we've got soup, lovely soup. Would you like that? He said, yeah, I'll have that. I said, hang on a minute, I'll check the weather because I think apparently there's going to be a storm. And I'd look out at one porthole on one side and say, no, it's perfectly clear on this side. And he'd look out the porthole on the other side and get splashed with water. And he'd go, well, I think there's a storm coming. And then the ship would go up and down and I would bring the food on and we'd slide up and down and eventually it would go all over him. Mm. So the thing about that routine is that it's a rule of three. So then you do the main course, which is which is we did with spaghetti bolognese, and the same thing happens, and exactly you follow exactly the same routine. I look out the window, nothing. He looks out the window, gets a splash of water. Then you do the dessert, which is trifle. I come on with a great big bowl of trifle. I say, hang on a minute, I'll just check the weather. And he says, no, no, hang on a minute, hang on a minute. I'll check that side. You check this side. And I go, no, 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 no. Let's do what we rehearsed. I'll check this side. You check. No, no, come on. And then, come on, boys and girls, you want her to check that side, don't you? Hmm. So I go, no, no, I'm not going to. Eventually, I go, okay, all right, I'll check that side. Then I look that side and say, oh, looks perfectly clear. He looks out the other window and gets water thrown in his face. And that's it. Then we do the whole thing. And then it's a rule of three, and yeah. we did it, and it's an hysterically funny routine.
Is he selling the first water like he's the actor's annoyed?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, why do I get this? You know, and not only that, he's the one getting the soup. Then he gets the spaghetti bolognese, and you know,
I
then
love
he gets
it that rule of three works in the same way as it does in a simple joke format, as it does in sketch or.
Absolutely, it creates, it sets the precedent, then it sort of in a way concretes it in with the second one, and the third one you know what to expect, so you could then break it.
What was the joke that you told me that didn't work but I liked it?
Yeah, I wanted to do a routine where somebody came on to say, look, I've got this song I'm going to sing, what do you think? And he goes to sing, but the other person on stage is doing something else. So either moving the scenery around or having a picture hung up on the wall or something like that. And so the first person says, right, should I sing you this song? He says, yeah, hang on a minute. I'll just, and he says, okay, good, right. And he starts to sing and the person says, so say it's hanging a picture. The person says, no, higher. So the person who's singing the song interprets that as I have to sing it higher. So you sing, you know, first one sings, tonight I'm gonna have myself a real good time. No, higher. Oh, tonight I'm gonna have myself a real. No, higher than that. Tonight I'm gonna have myself a real. And then he goes, no, actually, no. Try it lower. All right, tonight I'm gonna have a. Try it lower. Tonight I'm gonna have a. No, bring it right down. Put it right down. And then, you know, over to the left, over to the right. Try it, you know, turn it around the other way. Okay. And then you sing the words the wrong way round. And I was trying to think of all the different combinations of what you could do with that. But very early on, somebody said, no, that's not going to work.
I
thought it would.
Yeah, but I was sold on the first bit. But I think you could even have callbacks to it throughout the pantomime with other things other than hanging a picture.
Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sure there must be lots of things.
Now, that's a very good idea, that actually you make it a running joke, that the person's constantly coming on to try and audition this song.
Yeah.
Can I sing my song now? Morecambe and Wise used to do that with a bloke, not now, Arthur. You're too young to know this, but your bloke used to come on and play the mouth organ. He used to go, dum 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 dum. They go, no, not now, Arthur. And he go, oh, sorry. And he'd walk off.
And then keep coming back.
And he'd just keep coming back at inappropriate moments, you know.
Because then people start laughing in anticipation.
Yeah.
I think, especially if you did the same thing of that he wanted to do this one song.
Hmm.
I guess what you'd have to do is work out all the different ways you can instruct singing, I suppose. Yes. Like rock, a bit more rocky, like rocky. I don't know, but there's different styles of song that perhaps you could get them to sing it in,
yeah,
and things like that. I guess rock.
It depends what the other person's doing. The other person's got to have a variety of things that they can say about something. So that hanging the picture was the idea I had, or moving the scenery, but it needs to be something where there are lots of ways you can get people to do things. So you know, take it to the bridge and things like that. You can say, do you see what I mean? So that they then. Then,
did they not? You didn't. They didn't even try it in the panto.
No. I put it in the script, and they said, "We don't think that's going to work."
Wow, that's a.
And you know, I was quite new to it, and
I think we should start a pantomime, you and me. Just you and me do it next year.
Well, I'd like to. I like writing panto. I mean, I think the great thing is, children are incredibly open to the most ridiculous ideas. Yes. They will go with them. They enjoy them a lot, you know. That's why you can do a song sheet at the end. When I was a little kid, I can't remember anything more fun than they used to sing a song which was from the war, I think, bobbing up and down like this. I was sailing the ocean, bobbing up and down like this, friends of the sea, I'm bobbing up and down like this, and that's all it is. And it's a silly little song. So whenever you sang bobbing up and down like this, you used to jump up and down in your seat.
Oh.
Can you imagine any more fun than that?
Yeah.
As a child, you go to a theatre and they say, what we want you to do now is to leap up and down. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant.
You're breaking all the rules.
Yeah, and I like that. Have you got any other ideas down that you?
There are things that I've written in jokes. I was thinking about jokes I've done in the past that just are now obsolete. I quite like the idea of that. Yeah, there's a joke I used to say about staying in a lovely hotel. It was advertised as 4-star. You could tell it was 4-star because all the rooms smell of petrol.
Okay, right.
You see, but that doesn't work. You don't have 4-star petrol anymore.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
So I understand it, but it's amazing. I wonder, there must be so many jokes that
just disappear. And not just because they're politically correct or incorrect, but because they don't fit the system. They don't fit in, you know. They don't fit, they're not modern enough. They're not talking about something that people understand. There are so many jokes about just getting a phone call and picking up the receiver. We all do that. It's amazing that phone symbols on your actual, you know, phone, your smartphone, is an old-fashioned phone telephone. What the hell's that about?
Yeah.
You know, kids won't have the faintest idea what that is, apart from that's the symbol for telephone for some reason.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense, you know. But there's lots of jokes.
I think like TV shows like go out of date quite quick. So like I had sometimes on my memories on Facebook jokes I wrote like maybe 10 years ago pop up. And one the other day, I can't remember what the word was, but the idea was a house party and then something to do with medical dramas.
Mm-hmm.
But houses, that's not current anymore. So
no.
I don't think it would have worked really well anyway, but I just thought to myself, I can't even tweet that again because that's done. And even some things like I've mentioned on the podcast quite a long time ago that I had a series of Game of Thrones jokes, and you would assume Game of Thrones was the biggest TV show, so you would assume they would do well. But whenever I tried it, it wouldn't work. And if I asked the audience how many people watch Game of Thrones, I'd say less than 30%.
Yeah.
The audience watch the most popular TV show. It's because the whole thing's changed now, isn't it?
It's because it's the world they're judging it by. You know, they say it's enormous. I'm in a television series at the moment, which I've not seen. It's on Apple Plus or something. I don't have it. You know, so Apple TV. I don't know what it is. I've no idea. And everybody keeps saying, "Oh, I saw you in Slow Horses," and I go, "Oh, right, was it any good?" They go, "Yeah, it's brilliant. It's you know." I go, "Oh, right, good." Okay, I've no idea, you know. But then, as far as comedy is concerned, all my life has been obsessed with the quick, simple joke. Because I was saying, I really like your style of comedy because I love the delivery of the succinctness of a joke. I love jokes being done, you know. I was one the other day that came into my head, and the problem is I'd never know now whether I thought of it. Or it's something I heard a long time ago.
Right, okay,
you know, it's a quantity. So I would never claim ownership of these jokes. Woodpeckers are clever. They're much smarter than chickens. I mean, you never hear of a Kentucky Fried Woodpecker.
That's nice, yeah.
And we used to do a joke at the end of our show, which has always been one of my favourites. And I never quite understand why it's funny or why people laughed. But there was always a section of the audience that laughed, and that was always the pleasure of it.
Mm.
So we used to say, well, you know, thank you for coming. It's lovely to have you here. And we'll just leave you with our, you know, the show is called Radioactive. So we should leave with the radioactive motto of the day, which is be good to each other, always be kind, and never forget an owl in a sack troubles no man. An owl in a sack troubles no man. What's that about? I don't know.
What's that got to do with radioactive?
I don't know. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And it would work.
I mean, I think it was written by a man called Jeffrey Perkins, who was.
I mean, it's funny if it's delivered like poignant, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
As if it means something. I think that's what works, is you say it as if it really does mean something, you know. And it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing.
But I could see Monty Python doing that and it being hilarious. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so... he wrote a thing for us for a telly show, Jeffrey, which was, I played this character and we were doing a sort of a Challenge Annika thing, which is a thing that Annika Rice used to do where she flew around in a helicopter and we were spoofing that. So again, you know, it's gone, it's come, it's gone. But as part of it, they were in the studio and sort of directing me, and I would say to them, "Okay, right, I've come to a gate," and they say, "Okay, right, is it locked?" I say, "Yeah, it's locked." They say, "Well, all right, we'll climb over it then." Okay, I'll climb. No, hang on a second. No, you're going the wrong direction. No, climb back over the gate. Okay, I'll climb back over the gate, and so you should be going. Oh no, sorry, I got the map upside down. Okay, no, go back over the gate, and so I'd climb back over the gate, and slowly the shot pulled out to reveal that it was just a gate in the middle of an empty field. I love that. There was no fence, nothing. You could easily, but I'd climbed over it three or four
times.
That's
really funny. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So stupid.
So stupid. I mean, it makes no sense at all. And I love that. I love it when that happens.
That's awesome. Well, I think we should end that there. I mean, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. See you, mate.
Bye.
Bye.
Michael Fenton Stevens! Hashtag awooga to Michael Fenton Stevens. You know what? I don't do that outro very often now because we nearly always do interviews in-house. That's the first one in ages. So in flat, in studio. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did. Any feedback, let us know at Jokes with Mark across all social media. Go check out Michael's podcast.
Yeah, go and check out all the competition.
Check out My Time Capsule, my episode of My Time Capsule. Go listen to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't do it. I haven't talked about My Time Capsule.
Well, you haven't met him yet.
No. Well, might in the future.
You might in the future. Are you doing your Dave Party outro again?
I don't know what that means.
You know what I mean?
Do I?
That's how we ended the last podcast. You moaning because you didn't get an invite.
That's right.
For the Dave Party.
Cripes. That feels like a million years ago.
I know, right? But we're on tour now. Do check out the tour at marksimmons.co.uk or via my social media at Jokes with Mark. We've got so many tour dates, it just keeps on going. We're going everywhere we haven't been, and we're going back to places where they just want more. So check all those out. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify if you can be bothered. Please be bothered, it really helps us. Anything more from you, Danny?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Danny. And remember,
be more Gareth.
Hashtag awooga. And thanks to Matt for being here.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.